And good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider the news of the day. Of course, the main news of the day has been COVID-19 related, and we will be devoting most of the show to understanding what these latest developments mean for us. Datuk Dr. Zainal Arifin Omar, President of the Malaysian Public Health Physicians Association, will be joining us in the studio shortly. But first, some other interesting news. The UMNO Supreme Council met earlier today, and on the agenda was UMNO's role in the Perikatan National Government's cabinet. UMNO Supreme Council member Tajuddin Rahman was reported saying that most UMNO leaders were dissatisfied with the cabinet posts distribution and had called for dissolution of parliament and for snap elections. What do you make of this, Sharad?
Well, it's no surprise, Melissa. You know, this is a coalition, as all coalitions are, of competing interests. Mm-hmm. And the question is whether the Prime Minister, Muhyiddin Yassin, has been able to negotiate enough of a compromise on, on the various interests that the parties that support him in Parliament have. Mm. Now, the cabinet was one indication of whether he was successful. So clearly, cabinet positions is something that was going to be a bone of contention for some point. There are others, of course, and that includes the question of the agenda of this government. And already you see emerging, Melissa, interesting demands, including a rollback on reforms of the police force.
Right.
That's come out of the news reports
that's
as well.
That's definitely very interesting. And I think these kind of grouses about the cabinet allocation stemmed also from tweets coming from Pengerang MP Azalina Osman. She had urged for UMNO to be given fairer representation in cabinet. She's saying that Bersatu MPs only make up 28% of Perikatan Nasional, but gets one prime minister and two senior ministers in of course referring to Azman Ali and Mohd Razi Mohd Jidin from the Ministry of Education. And then meanwhile, UMNO, she claims, only has one minister, the Minister of Defence, despite making up 35% of Perikatan Nasional. And not just that, not just the numbers, she's also saying that UMNO MPs should have been given better portfolios in Muhyiddin's cabinet.
Yeah, so one imagines that every portfolio in a cabinet is important because they're all a part of this machinery of governance. But there are other ways of actually understanding the importance, relative importance of candidate positions. It has to do with ministries and their budgets. Mm. The budget allocated to a particular ministry, the developmental aspect or dimension of that budget, which means discretionary funds, abilities to hand out contracts. These also, I think, the minds of politicians playing these games around cabinet positions become very important. So
definitely,
for us who think that everything from art and culture to health are equally important,
right,
because they all kind of combine towards some, kind of larger interest. For politicians, they're looking at things like budgets. Right. Okay, so that's how they're passing out these issues, right?
Well, let's take a look at one ministry, the Environment Ministry. Now, they have come out to refute a news report which has claimed that its minister had purportedly defended logging activities in Kelantan. And the Minister for Environment is Tuan Ibrahim Tuan Man, who is also past deputy president. And yesterday, he clocked in for his job at Putrajaya, for his first day on the job at Putrajaya, and at that event, he was asked to respond to criticisms on logging activities in Pasled, Kelantan.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the question now seems to revolve around jurisdiction. What should he have answered when asked such a question?
Right.
He could have said, well, this is really not within my ambit. This is a state matter. He's not even from that state. If you know, Tuan Ibrahim's actually from Pahang and was a member of the state assembly for many years before he was elected as an MP, but of course from the state of Kelantan. So
right,
he's an MP from Kelantan, but actually he's a long-time Pahang representative.
Okay.
So, is
a
it
a question
about
of jurisdiction, perhaps?
Yeah, is it just teething pains? I mean, when you first get into the job, you're kind of trying to figure out what your jurisdictions are,
right,
what's your remit. The other thing is optics. Now, the headline, and because he's not to blame for this, but the optics aren't great, right? So, Minister of Environment protecting or defending logging activities seen, at least in the state of Kelantan, as the source of some of the problems we had in Kelantan over flooding. If you remember many years ago.
Yes, that's right.
So the over, you know, logging of Kelantan seen as destruction of the environment there. Mm. So the optics not great for a Minister of Environment.
Well, also, and the optics not great for the ministry to then refute something that the minister had said.
Yeah, you could see his clarification. Yes. They were trying to provide clarity to the general public.
I'm also quite interested to know what falls under the portfolio of the Ministry of Environment versus, say, the Ministry of Energy and Natural Resources, because natural resources, you know, a lot of that will fall under the same thing. I'm quite also keen to pay close attention to the Ministry of Environment's stand, this with this new minister, its stand on the transboundary haze pollution issue, its stand on perhaps Linus, its stand on Malaysia as a dumping ground for the world's plastic waste. All these things are quite important.
Yeah, and Linus was, you know, Kerry, in the state of Pahang, wonder what his past positions have been as a state assemblyman there. Mm. But there's also this other thing about the kind of some people might call it a bloated nature of the cabinet, you know, different ministries often overlapping, you know, interests between the ministries, the lack of rationalization of those ministries that that was attempted in the previous administration, the Pakatan Harapan administration, something that has been abandoned by this current administration. And Azmin Ali, a senior minister, you know, very famously arguing that because Malaysia has big problems, it needs a big cabinet.
All right. Well, let's move on to other news. Malaysia Airlines has asked its 13,000 employees to take voluntary unpaid leave as the COVID-19 takes a heavy toll on the airline's bottom line. Now, this according to the Edge Financial Daily, MAS employees are said to have the option of taking 3 months leave without pay or five days unpaid leave a month for the period of 3 months beginning April.
Yeah. You know, Melissa, and of course, you know, senior management is taking a 10% pay cut. Mm. Now, when you look at those things, I mean, the idea of not having pay for 3 months must hurt for a lot of, especially people on the lower end of the wage scale for MAS. If you're not, if you don't have a support system, if you don't have savings, if you don't have another breadwinner, if you're a sole breadwinner in the family, how would you actually take 3 months no paid leave?
Exactly.
And I wonder if, you know, we changed around. So senior management, presumably paid handsomely, took the 3 months no pay. Never mind, maybe they could still work for no pay. And then you said a 10% cut or an equivalent for those on the lower rung. I mean, the question is, why is it that the most vulnerable often have asked to make the biggest sacrifice?
Well, I'm curious to know if this is voluntary unpaid leave, is there the option of not taking that, you know, not volunteering for this, because many people cannot go without 3 months unpaid, 3 months of no salary. On that note of the you know, senior management taking a pay cut, Qantas CEO Alan Joyce had reportedly giving up his salary for the rest of the financial year, and the board of directors will be taking a 30% cut.
Yeah. Well, there's this other thing, you know, of course, is that workers are, and their interests are directly aligned with that of the company. So the company, you can demand that the company pay you, but if the company is going under and is bleeding out, then eventually people are going to lose jobs, right? That's how it's seen. The other possibility, of course, is that, you know, maybe airline or airports can take, there could be a moratorium on payments that banks could take. The rentier class of this country might think of actually taking a bit, making a bit of a sacrifice.
Well,
right?
What do you think about perhaps launching a special fund or a tabung COVID-19? Do you think that's a good idea? Because a special fund has been launched to help ease the burden burdens faced by those infected by COVID-19. I believe the Prime Minister had announced that the government will be contributing 1 million ringgit to this fund. Are we looking at perhaps using this fund to help those people affected?
Well, it's an interesting initiative, and, you know, in some ways mirrors the fund that the Pakatan Harapan had, and
so
in many ways
Harapan, wasn't it?
Yeah, this goes very different in its you know, in its purpose. Mm. But again, you know, with all these funds, you know, trust is essential, right? So if you don't trust the government of the day, if you don't trust, then why would you give to the fund? But if you do trust and you feel for this cause, then perhaps the question is again, whether it's the fund will be well managed, what are the criteria for helping people, how long will they have to be out of work before you help them, so on and so forth. I mean, all that needs, those details need to come out too,
I think. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. After this, Dr. Zainal Omar from the Malaysian Public Health Physicians Association will join us to discuss the latest on the COVID-19 pandemic. Stay tuned to Consider This.